Hi, and welcome to In the Studio. I'm Redbeard with the stories behind history's greatest rock and roll albums.
Excuse me.
You're welcome.
Guitar up.
One, two, three.
Today, In the Studio, the brief but influential career of a young British foursome who favored a blend of blues with rock to set them free.
Coincidence and magic occurring at that time. We were all looking for what became Free and do something. I mean, I was looking at bands like Cream and Hendrix and idolizing those guys and really wanting to follow in their footsteps. Hi, I'm Paul Rogers, in the studio with my good friend, Redbeard.
The teenage London quartet known as Free managed to put out six influential studio albums, plus a live one, between 1968 and 1973, forging the blueprint for arena fillers like Bad Company and Foreigner to follow later in the 70s. Free also serves as the launchpad for singer Paul Rogers' vocal legend and songwriting skills. Writing in the All Music Guide, Jason Ankeny asserts, and I quote, Free helped lay the foundation for the rise of hard rock, stripping the earthy sound of British blues down to its raw, minimalist core, end quote. Free bass player, composer Andy Fraser, was already a veteran of John Mayall's Blues Breakers, but that didn't alter the fact that Fraser was only 16 when he joined singer-songwriter Paul Rogers, drummer Simon Kirk, and bluesy guitarist Paul Kossoff, none of whom were more than 20 years old at the time. Bands like the Rolling Stones, the Yardbirds, and Cream were proving to be the flip side of the coin of British musical success minted by the more pop-oriented Beatles. Free's lead singer, songwriter Paul Rogers, recalls the atmosphere in 1968 in which Free was formed.
There was a lot of coincidence and magic occurring at that time. We were all looking for what became Free. And do something. I mean, I was looking at bands like Cream and Hendrix, and idolizing those guys, and really wanting to follow in their footsteps. I was playing in a blues band in a blues club called the Fickle Pickle in Finsbury Park. And this long-haired guy came up, hair down to his knees, and all you could see protruding out of the hair was flares. So it was like one big flare. He said, I like what you're doing and I'd like to have a jam with you in the break. So I spoke to my band, would they lend him a guitar, blah, blah. So we did a couple of things and we sat down with a drink and we just said, listen, we got to get a band together. And I wanted to be completely professional, and as in you only do the music and you totally concentrate on that. And he said, he went away and thought about it and talked to the drummer there, which was Simon Kirk. And he was of the same mind that we wanted to go completely professional, is the word. I mean, which meant not doing a day job, basically. And so there was three of us. And then at the Nag's Head, which is another room above a pub, a bar, where blues was played, like I used to see Freddie King there. And there was a little postcard-size advertisement on the board said, bass player, ex-John Mayall, looking for band, you know. So Koss called him and we arranged to get together at the Nag's Head. We set our gear up. And I was very impressed with Andy Fraser at the time, you know. He arrived in a taxi, all business-like, and whipped his cabinets together and was ready to rock, you know. And he had the right gear. He had two Marshall cabinets and a stack, you know, and a head, which was what everyone had in those days. And, of course, we could play blues even though we'd never played together before. So when we met about lunchtime, we were four individuals, and by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it was a band, you know.
Carry me away. I know your angel eye can see through me. Never, 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 never get enough.
Woman, I'll give you anything except my car. My car and my guitar. That's from Free and their 1969 second album with the song Woman. All of Free's hallmarks are there in that song. Paul Rogers' soulful vocal, Andy Fraser's inventive bass lines, Simon Kirk's simple rhythmic groove, and space, lots of it, for Paul Kossoff's weaving, wailing guitar to slither in and around the arrangement. Lead singer Paul Rogers shares his earliest days with us.
I was born and raised in the northeast of England, a place called Middlesbrough, which is was then a shipbuilding, steelworks, and chemical industrial town. It's on the Tees River. I think the first thing, being born on a river or close to the sea, is the awareness that there is a bigger world out there, and the desire to go see it, I guess, you know. There was a similar thing that the Beatles said about Liverpool, was that they used to get a lot of imports that the sailors would bring in from the States, you know, and they were hearing a lot of records that were current in America at that time, but you couldn't get in England. And it was a similar thing in Middlesbrough as well. There was a lot of soul and blues around that just wasn't in the charts, you know. I didn't actually at the time know where it was coming from. And that was a very strong influence on what I did, yeah.
English culture in Middlesbrough did not encourage self-expression, so American Delta blues and soul music had a profound effect on the young, impressionable Paul Rogers.
I think for me, coming from my background, there's very little emphasis placed on emotion in a background such as mine. I mean, my father, you know, you don't express yourself, you know, and so the music really was that outlet. When I heard Otis Redding sing from the bottom of his soul that a change is going to come, I found a great inspiration in that. And the same with Howlin' Wolf singing, "How many more years you're going to treat me like a dog?" Like, I thought, yeah. You know, it was the real real deal. It wasn't I love you, baby, ooby dooby doo, you know. So that it definitely appealed to me, yeah. The first record I heard by Otis was probably My Girl. And I was in a band when I was 14, and we were good friends with the owner of a club in Middlesbrough called John McCoy. The guy was called John McCoy. The club was called the Purple Onion. And we were actually underage to go in there, but they sort of, we went in on the nod, you know, through the back door. And they were playing a lot of the soul imports in that nightclub, and they had a lot of great bands too. John would go down to the Marquee, and he was a great talent spotter. He would spot up and coming bands such as Jethro Tull and book 'em before they got famous, you know, or The Move at one time, and The Who even, really good stuff. And so I got exposed to, and Cream, funnily enough, to very great bands at very close quarters in club circumstances, and I thought, this is where it's at, you know. So, I mean, yeah, and between the bands, they would play these great records, and there would be Sam and Dave, I know you wanna leave me, and it was just the walls would sweat, and it was just a great atmosphere, you know.
Heart that's made of ice, and I know.
That's the title song to Free's third album, 1970's Fire and Water, which would prove to be their international breakthrough. But rehearsing for the first time, a chance meeting with British veteran Alexis Korner gave the four teenage lads the missing piece of the puzzle. Here's Paul Rodgers.
Well, yeah, that was another thing that was an Andy Fraser connection, because he, via, I suppose, his connection with blues and John Mayall, knew Alexis Korner, who was sort of like a father figure to him in lots of ways, you know. So Alexis came down with his missus and kids, and they turned up for the rehearsal. And they, funnily enough, they walked in the door just as we were finishing off a song that Koss and I had written called Moonshine. And they walked in on the final note, which was, I don't know, it was very poignant, because I'd never hit such a high note myself. It was great. So, sit here alone and cry, big high note. So anyway, he walks in, and we took a break, you know, we sat around chin-wagging, and he said, you know, you sound really good. He said, I was listening outside the door before I came in, because I didn't want to disturb you. But I had to come in the end, because it sounds really good. You seem set. Well, what you need is a name. Have you thought about that? And we were like, well, you know, we got, like, not really. And so we were stumped, we all sat in silence for a bit, and he said, I had a band for a very short time. I don't know if this will be any use to you. We might want to kick it about. And it was called Free at Last. And it's little lights went on each of our heads, actually, and we looked at each other, because in the light of the name of, like, Cream and that sort of thing, we looked at each other and said, Free. It has to be Free. I mean, it was perfect.
That's Free from the 1970 album Fire and Water with the song Heavy Load with Paul Rodgers on piano. When we return, the third time's the charm for Free, as their struggle to succeed would turn all right now. I'm Redbeard with Paul Rodgers in the studio for the best of Free. Welcome back in the studio for the best of Free. I'm Redbeard. Free's first two albums were not successful sellers, but that all changed with 1970's Fire and Water album, containing a simple song, All Right Now, with gobs of space that framed the raw instruments and voice. Beginner's luck or collective genius? Free singer and the co-author of All Right Now, Paul Rodgers, responds in the studio.
Bit of both, actually. Beginner's genius? In lots of ways. I mean, I think the Kinks influences in a way. You know that? Dang, 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 dang. You know, it's very much a stamp on it. And Andy did a lot of the arrangements, and that was very much a part of the sound. And there was a great understanding between us, which was a natural thing, actually, that came out of listening to those great bluesmen, of having a musical conversation and leaving room for each other. It was such a good rapport that... if ever an engineer asked me not to sing on this because we wanted to get total separation and to sing on the track after the band had played it, Koss could play around where he knew I would be singing and it would be perfect. That question and answer thing that we did, it was cosmic communication in lots of ways. I think there are a lot of stages of development. You know, you start out innocent with your raw talent, and then you begin to develop technique. If you get stuck on technique, you get stuck on technique. You need to work your way through it back to the innocence, and so that you are on the other side of technique. You know, so you're not thinking, if I do this, this will happen, blah, 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 blah. That's very much the case with songwriting as well, because, you know, if you start thinking about it, oh, this will be good, oh, this will go to da, 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 then you'll lose the thread. The thing is to get out of the way and let it write itself.
Love, love above. Now you're trying to trick me in love.
Written by Andy Fraser and Paul Rogers, that's Free, with the number 4 U.S. hit from 1970's Fire and Water album called All Right Now. Buddy Holly and Chuck Berry knew not to underestimate a deceptively simple song like All Right Now. Here's co-author Paul Rogers.
The songwriters that I've spoken to all agree that the songs seem to come from a state of mind that is somewhere between waking and sleeping, really. That period of time, I'm often on the brink of drifting to sleep when I'll get an idea and I have to wake up, grab a pen, turn the light on and write it down, because I've learned from experience that whilst it's very strong in your mind at the time, it's like a dream, you know, where you think you're going to remember it and then it's very fragmented the next day. So it's best to sort of have pen and paper or tape roll, you know, tape beside you to catch it. I find different people write at different times as well. Neil Sean from Journey told me, he said, oh man, you see, I get up first thing in the morning, I get the guitar out and I start playing. And until that time, I'd never done that. I always was a night songwriter. And I tried that for a bit. And, you know, there are a lot of fresh ideas that turn up first thing in the morning, fresh out of dreamland, you know.
Yeah.
brilliant production of a groove that just won't quit. That's The Stealer from Free's 1970 album Highway. But just how big of a hit was All Right Now for Free in 1970? Here's an example. Rock historians all know that the 1970 Isle of Wight Festival in August 1970 off the coast of England was Jimi Hendrix's final performance. But it tends to obscure the fact that the headliners of the huge multi-day rock festival was Free. Paul Rodgers gave me a real-world example of the first fruits of rock stardom.
I think the first thing I noticed is that on my birthday, I got about 500 birthday cards from people I didn't know. And that, I thought, that's great, you know what I mean? Other than that, it didn't really change us. We just, for it, of course, not in, immediately it didn't really change us. Eventually, what did happen was that... I think actually that we hadn't stopped working. We were very dedicated, and all we did was gig after gig after tour all the time. And it, I don't know, this is with hindsight, and I don't know how accurate it is or not really, but the pressure actually increased, you know. And I think possibly that drove us apart from each other in a way, because we were so pressured to be together we were very young, really. I don't think we could handle it too well. We were okay in the small venues where it was eyeball to eyeball, and it was a good, it was a joyful thing. See, I never saw beyond the clubs, really. You know, that was the ultimate thing to achieve for me. But it got so much bigger than that, and I thought, well, wow, how do you deal with all this, you know?
Time.
with the band Chuggin' Like a Choo-Choo. That's called Catch a Train from Free and their 1972 album Free at Last. But this was an album born out of frustration, as the young and naive members of Free would quickly learn that after an international hit like All Right Now, others who made their livelihood from the band expected them to repeat that success, to earn and then earn some more. Paul Rodgers details the demise next. I'm Redbeard in the studio for the best of Free.
Hi, I'm Paul Rodgers in the studio with my good friend Redbeard.
Thanks, Paul. After scoring a top five international hit with the song All Right Now, the members of Free were naive to the expectations to make even more. Free made albums full of songs decidedly not top 40 singles because the pop world was increasingly antithetical to 1970s rock and roll credibility. Additionally, this was an era when record companies routinely expected two complete albums a year, written, recorded, and released, plus touring to promote these albums on both sides of the Atlantic. After making both Fire and Water, plus the Highway album, both in 1970, with constant touring in between, the members of Free were beat. Here's Paul Rodgers.
I think we needed a break. I think we needed a break more than anything else. And the work just kept piling on and piling on. And nowadays, what people do, you know, is take a break, you know. And it was the only way to get some sort of rest. And then of course it hit the papers and became a fact, you know, Free split, boom, and you read it yourself. You thought, well, that's it. I guess that we did split, you know.
Random.
another powerful song by Free from the pen of lead singer Paul Rodgers. That's Wishing Well from the 1973 album Heartbreaker. It was during the sabbatical that a chance meeting would later spark one of the true 70s supergroups. Here's Paul Rodgers.
Well, what happened was that in between the two, the first time Free split up and the second time, and when it got back together, I had a band called Peace. It was just a three-member band. But I did play with Mott the Hoople as a guest artist, I guess. And in the band room, I met up with Mick Ralphs, and we started to noodle around on the guitars. And he confessed to me that he wasn't really happy with Mott the Hoople, and he had these songs that he wished they would do, but they didn't want to do, one of which was Can't Get Enough of Your Love. And I heard it, and I said, well, that's a hit. He said, do you really think so, man? I said, does a bear, you know. So he said, well, I mean, is it a song you could sing? I said, yeah, I certainly could sing that, no problem. Anyway, so we were getting along good about songs and stuff, and that's and the idea for forming a band came right there, you know, because I had it in my head that I wanted to come back, I wanted to tour the world. I'd had enough of untogetherness amongst the band members and things like that. I wanted a really strong band. Everyone was totally committed and totally together and able to deal with, say, in the States here, the size, venues and all that. That was the thing behind Bad Company. We struggled with the name, actually. For one, I actually considered the name Fury for a while, but it was too, like, free. And then I started to write a song called Bad Company, and I phoned Ralph up and I says, Bad Company. He goes, that's it. And so we called the Bandit as well. And I think it was and is a very good name for a rock and roll band because it's got like instant rock and roll credibility, you know.
As the record execs and album producers tried to recreate the hit process that resulted in the song All Right Now, guitarist Paul Kossoff was feeling squeezed by the arrangements, which were growing more sophisticated, with less space for Koss's bluesy sustain to shake a note. After regrouping to record Free at Last in 1972, Free attempted to tour the U.S. again, but it proved disastrous. Andy Fraser and Paul Rodgers quarreled. Paul Kossoff was too strung out on heroin to perform at several gigs, including L.A. One roadie was deported. Another actually died. Again, Paul Rodgers.
And then from then on, it hit Koss harder than anyone else. So he went down very fast, actually. It was a surprise us all. And I remember being in the studio and Andy coming and saying, let's get the band back together because of Paul. He's going down fast, and maybe we can pull him together. So we did. We did get the band back together again, and it was a shame, actually. That's when we released the Heartbreaker album. It was a crying shame because we could just about get it together in the studio because you can take one, take two, take 200, can't you, you know? But come the showtime, it was not happening. Well, it was sporadic. Sometimes it would be brilliant, and then the next night it'd be a total shambles, and it was, you know, you can't live like that. No, Koss was an absolute diamond. I mean, he was a great, great bloke, lost in his own insecurities and his own world. You know, it's a shame, really.
Watch my hand writing this last letter. Watch my hand, knowing I won't forget her. No, I won't forget her. Take my thing. Thank you.
That melancholy song from Free's album Highway turned out to be eerily prophetic. Andy Fraser was gone even before the final album in 1973 called Heartbreaker. Simon Kirk and Paul Rodgers went on to form Bad Company. Guitarist Paul Kossoff released Backstreet Crawler but never could kick heroin. Kossoff died on a flight between New York and London in March 1976. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this.